The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good morning. It is time to get up with the madness of March. Brackets busted. Cinderella's dancing up a storm. We've got it covered every which way. Then, a week into free agency and a clear picture has emerged. We'll tell you who are the biggest winners and by far the biggest losers of free agency. And the king is down. LeBron out a while. We'll tell you exactly what his injury means for the Lakers and the entire NBA as we get up with you starting right now. On a Monday, I am Greeny. Delighted you are here. We are jam-packed today off a crazy sports weekend. We got to get to the injuries in the NBA. We got to get to all the football news, but we begin with a Sunday capping off a weekend filled with upsets in the NCAA tournament. And of course, it began yesterday with the 8 seed Loyola Chicago beating the 1 seed Illinois in the Midwest. Loyola and Sister Jean, you remember them from the Final Four 2 years ago, also in the Midwest. Number 11 seed Syracuse knocking out the 3 seed West Virginia behind 25 from Buddy Boeheim. And then late last night, 12-seeded Oregon State knocking out the presumptive number 1 pick in the draft, Cade Cunningham, and 4th-seed Oklahoma State. So all those were good, but this was the main event in the South. The 15-seed Oral Roberts taking on the 7, Florida. This was a thriller. Florida down 1 under 3 minutes to go. This is Noah Locke floating, hitting. The Gators are up by 1, ensuing Oral Roberts' possession. Where are you going to go for a bucket? How about a guy who did not make a basket the rest of the night? That is Deshaun Weaver, his only basket. Oral Roberts up by 2. Final seconds. Florida, last gasp. It's up. It's no good. We got desperation. They're down by 3. Oh, my goodness. Oral Roberts has won. The 15-seed Oral Roberts is on to the Sweet 16 with an 81-78 victory over Florida. What an extraordinary day it was. And by the way, if you had thrown $100 on a money line parlay on Loyola, Syracuse, Oregon State, and Oral Roberts yesterday, would have paid over $14,000. That is how unlikely the events of yesterday were, capping off what's been an incredible start to this NCAA tournament. And there is Jay Billis. And Jay, we have had a disproportionate number of upsets in the early going. And I'm just thinking about the uniqueness of this season with the pandemic and they're all in one place and the bubble and everything else. To what would you attribute the fact that we always get madness in March, but this has been above and beyond?
Yeah, I don't know that it has to do with any of those things, whether it's the bubble or things like that. I mean, we've had 3 of the double-digit seeds that won were major conference teams. And so Power 5, I don't necessarily count those as like major upsets. The ones that really stood out were, you know, to have Oral Roberts be the second 15 ever to win another game. We had 8 15s that beat 2s. Since 1985. That's not very many. And 8-132 is not a very good record. But Florida Gulf Coast did it a few years ago, won a second game. Now Oral Roberts has done that. And then the other big one was Abilene Christian beating Texas. And they've got UCLA today. I think they have a great opportunity to win that game because they forced so many turnovers. But the one that stood out more than any other was Loyola Chicago winning over Illinois. And Loyola Chicago is a great defensive team. And I think actually now that Midwest bracket is the one that I've never seen before. I mean, you've got a 2 in Houston, an 8 in Loyola, and I think they were probably underseeded, an 11 in Syracuse, and a 12 in Oregon State. That adds up to a seed number of 33. I've never seen that before. That's the one that skewed this entire tournament to make it look so bizarre. I think everything else looks quote unquote normal. We've had kind of a normal amount of upsets and chaos. This one has been a bomb dropped in the middle of it. And it's totally exploded the whole bracket. I've never seen anything quite like the Midwest.
One of the reasons for that, though, Jay, and you touched on it briefly, is that Loyola probably should not have been an 8. The KenPom rankings, which are an analytical way of breaking down all these teams, The top eight teams in the country when the season ended, I just want to lay this out for everyone to make it clear. When they ranked the top eight teams in America, of those eight teams, four of them became one seeds, three of them became two seeds, and the other one was Loyola of Illinois, who became an eight seed. So, Jay, a lot of people were pointing that out yesterday and saying, why was this team so underseeded?
It's hard to explain. When the bracket came out, I think we all kind of gave the committee a little bit of a break because we hadn't had a tournament in a year, so nobody wanted to complain. We wanted to celebrate and talk about the games. There were some seeding issues throughout, but there normally are. And I do think that was a seeding error, but that doesn't mean Illinois should have played the way they did. I mean, one thing that I couldn't get over during the game was Illinois did not guard Cameron Krutwig. They just let him cut them up, and he's a great passer. I mean, Greeny, look, he's put up numbers in the Missouri Valley Conference. He looks like he should be knocking on your door to fix your refrigerator, but he's put up numbers in that league that only Larry Bird, Oscar Robertson, and Hersey Hawkins have been able to match in points, rebounds, and assists. I mean, that dude can play. He also plays the harmonica, which is an interesting choice of musical instruments, but he's ridiculously talented and understands the game, and they never put any pressure on him. It's like letting Tom Brady, let's not rush Brady. Let's all hang back and see if he can find an open receiver. That's what they did the whole game, and I was just really surprised that was never adjusted.
Now, he may have to learn one shining moment on that harmonica if he keeps it going the way he has done it so far. Billis, I'll get one more upset from you a little later in the morning. Thank you. We'll check back with you as the day continues. So that's where it all begins. Then we shift gears to NFL free agency on the winners and the losers. And I start with Damian Woody. D. Wood, give me a winner in free agency so far.
Yeah, Greeny, I'm going to go with the Buffalo Bills. Sometimes it's not about all this flashy move outside, but retaining your guys on your roster. And we know the Buffalo Bills are going to be one of the contenders in the AFC. They were able to re-sign Matt Milano, who's an outstanding linebacker, a couple of starting offensive linemen. But this is all about the continuation of Josh Allen to be better. And also Emmanuel Sanders coming over from the Saints.
And then Kimberly Martin is with us. How about the biggest loser in free agency to this point?
Oh, Greeny, the Bears, only because the one thing they had to do this offseason was make a splash of QB, and what did they get? Andy Dalton. He's a good serviceable QB, but clearly they wanted Russell, could not get him. And if you're Allen Robinson, are you feeling great about starting the year with Andy Dalton?
No, I can speak from direct experience. A lot of the Bears fans aren't feeling great about it either. So their receiver and their fans sharing the same feelings. Kimberly gets up with us today. D. Wood, Mike Tannenbaum is here, and Dominique Foxworth will join us momentarily. And, you know, when we talk about the Bears, one of the things they had been in was very much in the Russell Wilson sweepstakes. And it is very hard to read this. Let me just show you what Russell Wilson tweeted over the weekend. So Chris Carson re-signs, the running back, re-signs with the Seahawks, which was something of a surprise. And Russell Wilson tweeted at him, big time, let's go 32. Which, in perfect keeping with the way he has handled this offseason, isn't really saying anything. It's not saying he's coming back. It's not saying he is or he isn't. It's just sort of pointing out that he's aware of what's going on and doesn't have an opinion on it that he wants to share publicly, which is confusing to everyone. Mike Tannenbaum, how should we read the situation with Russell Wilson in Seattle right now?
Oh, I think it's very much in play, Greeny, for a couple of reasons. One, Russell didn't say, hey, let's go 32. We're going to go win a championship. And more fundamentally, Green Bay came out and said, hey, Aaron Rodgers, you may think it's a beautiful mystery, but you're going to be here. Seattle hasn't said that. So to me, this is very much alive. And between now and the draft, we got to keep a very close eye on this. And I still think that Seattle's going to have to get a quarterback to make this trade. But I very much think, based on what Russell Wilson has said and what Seattle hasn't said, that a trade is still in the mix.
So, Kimberly, to bring together the two items that we were just talking about, if the Russell Wilson of it all remains in some degree of play in Seattle, does it in Chicago? They signed Andy Dalton, but he's not getting paid $30 million a year. Is there a way that that can still happen? Because that would vault them from the ranks of the biggest losers to the biggest winners.
Listen, Greeny, if Adam Schefter's not closing the door, then it's on the table. We'll see if it happens. Listen, you know, the relationship between the Seahawks and Russell, it's almost like a marriage. Like, if Russell is saying, I'm not happy, well, in your marriage, you tell your spouse, hey, stop doing this, do more of that, do less of this. And you got to give them time to at least show you that, okay, I hear you and I'll do better. Russell needs to tell the Seahawks what he wants, and he needs to give them time to show him, like, okay, we want to make you happy. But that door is open just a tiny crack, Greeny, and that's enough for the storyline to continue.
Absolutely. I think it remains open on the Russell Wilson side of it. The Seahawks have to be convinced that they're going to have to do it, and he doesn't seem to be willing to push it to that point. So, Damian Woody, what is your read on the situation? Again, Russell Wilson, cryptic tweets about the re-signing in Seattle of one of his teammates. What do you think of the whole thing, D. Wood?
I think everything is very fluid right now, Greeny, and we all know that sometimes things happen when you come upon the deadline, and the deadline to me is a draft. I think the Chicago Bears are still not out of it, regardless of the whole Andy Dalton signing there and quote unquote being anointed a starter. Listen, if you're Ryan Pace and company, your job is on the line this year. If you have an opportunity somehow, some way to get Russell Wilson, you have to make that deal. Okay, you can't depend on Andy Dalton, and you're competing with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers in your own division mm-hmm. to save your job. So at some point, and again, the draft to me is the deadline, you gotta continue to push all your chips on the table to try to make this move happen.
Super quickly, and we can get more deeply into some of the details later, but Mike Tannenbaum, we don't see a lot of three-way trades in the NFL, but when people look at the draft capital that the Bears do not have, one wonders if there's any way they're going to get Russell Wilson, would it have to be in a three-way trade?
Yeah, absolutely. And the one quarterback that makes sense, Greeny, is the New York Jets and Sam Darnold. His $4.6 million salary this year going from the Jets to Seattle, then Seattle trading picks to Russell Wilson goes to Chicago, picks go to the Jets, Jets take Zach Wilson, and that's the way the basics of a trade could work between those three teams.
That feels like an option here if it is still going to work out. We'll keep a close eye on that. Again, Nick will join us coming up. Meanwhile, we're just getting rolling. What a busy day coming off a busy weekend. LeBron is down, and the NBA trade deadline is right around the corner. Do the Lakers need to make a move right now? Woj will answer that question as he joins us live in just a moment. And then the Giants make a move to bolster their offense. The question is, will it make a difference for their quarterback? Is it a make or break year for Danny Dimes? Answers on the way. Get up on ESPN.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Get Up is brought to you by Popeye's Chicken Sandwich. And on this incredibly busy morning, to the biggest story in the NBA, LeBron James with a high ankle sprain that he suffered in the Lakers' 5-point loss to Atlanta on Saturday night. You saw it right there. The team announcing he will be out indefinitely. With both LeBron and Anthony Davis out with injuries, the Lakers lost again last night to the Suns, 111-94. And not surprisingly, they have struggled this year when both LeBron and AD are not on the court. In 463 minutes, the Lakers have been outscored by over 4 points per 100 possessions this season. And it looks like that's going to be the case now for some time. Here he is, our insider extraordinaire. Woj is with me. Woj, what is the latest we're hearing on LeBron and that injury?
Greeny, they're still evaluating that high ankle sprain, but I'm told that the Lakers are preparing for the possibility they could be without LeBron James for 3 weeks, even a month. That's a normal time frame for recovery for that injury, but they're still firming up a timeline. James has shown in his career an incredible ability to recover quickly from injury and play through injury, but this one's not going to be so easy. And you know, the Lakers, again, are preparing for the possibility. This is going to be weeks, not days.
All right, so weeks, maybe even as long as a month. Meanwhile, Woj, what do we know about Anthony Davis and when we should expect to see him back?
Well, you know, he's still recovering from that calf injury. His timeline doesn't change because LeBron James is out. You know, they're not going to rush him back. So he's still, I think, at least through the next week or two, you know, as he starts to, as they start to test that injury. But the Lakers are preparing again to go into Thursday's trade deadline, you know, really looking more long-term with this team and trying to make sure that they can plug some holes for when they do have a healthy LeBron James and Anthony Davis back for the playoffs. But you heard Dennis Schroeder say it last night. This team's going to have to learn to play with some more pace, play faster, be scrappier on defense. It is a tall order for them to be competitive without those two players.
Yes, clearly. So that was going to be where I went next. The trade deadline is, as you just mentioned, on Thursday. How does this injury impact what we should expect to see the Lakers do?
I don't know that it impacts it, Greeny, because they know they're going to get both guys back, and they have to build a team and make moves that are designed for the long term, not for a short stretch of time here. Listen, the Lakers have been active in the trade market, but I think for them, the buyout market after the trade deadline is where they could really impact, because then you're adding players without having to lose anyone in a trade or have to trade out assets. Certainly Andre Drummond remains a real big target for the Lakers. If he's bought out, doesn't get traded here between now and Thursday. But this is a Laker team that, you know, all of a sudden, if you're the Jazz or you're the Suns, you're a 1-2 seed, and all of a sudden you show up for the playoffs and there's a healthy AD and LeBron in the 7th-8th seed. You know, that's not exactly what you imagined earning a 1 or 2 seed to get, but that's how this may turn out.
That's exactly right. That will be one of the fascinating subplots of all of this. Where do the Lakers wind up placing in the playoff positioning, and how does that wind up, for lack of a better word, just destroying the season of somebody else who didn't deserve it? Woj, outstanding. Thank you. We will check back with you as further information becomes available. And obviously, that was another piece of news last night. If you're just waking up and had not heard, LaMelo Ball went down, and he may not get up. He is the presumptive NBA Rookie of the Year, but he has a fractured bone in his wrist, and we would expect him now to be out for the season. So we had that as well yesterday. And then we had this. Just wanted to finish up the NBA conversation with a moment of just absolute sensationalness. Look at this. Bam, Adebayo up and throwing it down. He'd be called for an offensive foul, but it was still very much worth seeing. Very much worth seeing Bam Adebayo throwing one down on Domantas Sabonis. As far as I'm concerned, that's a winning play, even if it won't go in the other way. All right, back to the NFL, and we're going to go through some of the free agency moves that have been made, some that have been underrated, some that have been overrated. D. Wood, what has been an overrated move in your opinion?
I think Tennessee signing Bud Dupree to that big deal. We all know that Bud Dupree is coming off of a torn ACL, major knee injury. And now he's going to be counted upon to be the main pass rusher with the Tennessee Titans. I think the question has to be asked, is he a product of having T.J. Watt on the other side as far as his production is concerned? We're going to see, but that's a guy that I point out.
He's been very productive, but you're right. That is an interesting question. Kimberly, next. Give me an underrated or overrated move.
Greeny, I love Washington signing former Panthers receiver Curtis Samuel. Last year, Teddy Bridgewater, the Panthers QB, talked about Samuel glowingly, said, whatever we need, he can give it to us, and that's what Washington gets. He's clutch on third down, and his catch rate is almost 80%. That is huge for Scott Turner and this Washington offense.
Completely agree. They are sneaky excellent. Meanwhile, Dominique, how about the Giants signing Kenny Golladay?
Yeah, I think that's an overrated move. I think Kenny Golladay is obviously a big body guy that can make contested catches, but this is not what the Giants needed. The Giants needed help on their O-line. They have playmakers on the outside, and they got playmaker at tight end. They got a playmaker at running back. They really didn't need more weapons as much as they needed protection, especially in this market where it seems like receivers aren't getting paid. The draft is full of receivers. It's kind of interesting and concerning that they went all in on Kenny Golladay for a three-year deal, and I don't think he's going to be that impactful for Daniel Jones coming up.
Well, that is really the question that we have here, Kimberly, is no one is going to say this if he winds up playing great. Is the sense you got from people around the league that the Giants overpaid for Kenny Golladay?
You know, when you look at the amount of money per year, it's on track with Tariq Hill and Odell Beckham Jr. at $18 million. So is Kenny Golladay that type of weapon? No, but here's the thing. I will say to Dominique and to others who are critical, listen, not too long ago, people were scratching their head at Brandon Bean giving up so much draft capital for Stephon Diggs. Now, Kenny Golladay is not Stephon Diggs, but look how it worked out for Josh Allen. If Daniel Dimes plays well and Kenny Golladay is a fit and he's making plays, David Gettleman's going to be praised for this move.
Well, Dominique, I think that's the point. And we say good morning to you, by the way. We had a little technical trouble getting you up at the beginning. But that really is the question, is you want to give Daniel Jones every opportunity to show you whether he is or isn't going to be your quarterback. And so getting him another weapon, doesn't it help with that?
No. I mean, Kimberly just loves disagreeing with me. That's what it boils down to. I love Kimberly, but she always wants to say I'm wrong even when I'm right. That guy, I mean, Galladay's a good receiver, but he's not the same type of receiver as they got up there in Buffalo with Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs is a man-beating receiver who's going to find himself wide open. He's the quarterback's best friend. Kenny Golladay is more of a contested catch guy. He's not going to look open. You got to throw it up there and cross your fingers. And for a guy like Daniel Jones, who does have a turnover problem, Kenny Golladay doesn't seem like the perfect fit in that situation necessarily, especially when they already have Darius Slayton and Shepard and guys like that who do have the ability to get open. So I like it. I wish it were the same thing, but he's no Stephon Diggs. You remember a couple years ago, I had Stephon Diggs in my top three receivers. Everybody thought I was crazy, but I look pretty smart now. Not as smart as Brandon Bean, though, I guess.
Well, that's fair. And again, it went a long way towards developing the quarterback in Buffalo. We'll see if that's the thinking here. I have to leave it there for the moment, but we'll come back to this because this was the move everyone was waiting to see. Does it make the Giants a contender in the NFC East, a division that Washington won last year? Now, with some key moves this offseason, is there any reason to think they won't do it again this year? We're talking about it next. It's Get Up on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
We're back on Get Up, and Jalen Hurts, as we speak, is the only quarterback on the Eagles roster, but that may change soon. Our Jeremy Fowler had this to say about a potential trade between the Eagles and the Bears that could bring a very familiar face back to Philly.
I wouldn't take a Nick Foles Philadelphia reunion off the table right now because a few weeks ago, when Chicago was looking to get Carson Wentz, they included Nick Foles in a potential package to Philadelphia. Now, Wentz ultimately went to Indianapolis, but those talks had been ongoing. They're in place. All they would have to do this week is revive them.
Okay, I love everything about this story because it involves the two most interesting quarterback situations in the sport right now, to me, Chicago and Philadelphia. So, Dominique, let me start with you there. What would you make of if the Bears were to work out a trade, send Nick Foles back to Philadelphia where, you know, we all remember what he did there just a few years ago. How impactful do you feel that would be for the Eagles? Dominique definitely doesn't hear me. I could tell that this is the universal sign for I don't hear the host. So let me go over to Kimberly Martin and ask you the same question. Kimberly, how significant of a move do you think that is for an Eagles team that right now has the sixth pick in the draft and maybe going in with Jalen Hurts as their quarterback?
Yeah, I got Dominique out the paint. So listen, Nick, I love it if he comes in as the backup because there's a damn statue of this guy in Philly. What is not to love about this storyline? But at the end of the day, we still don't know enough about Jalen Hurts and what he can be. But even adding Nick Foles, Jalen Hurts isn't going to look over his shoulder. He's been a competitor. He's had to compete for the starting job. He's lost his job before, and he's come out and he's gotten this Eagle starting job. So adding Nick Foles doesn't take anything away from Jalen Hurts. If anything, it gives the Eagles insurance. There's no pressure on Nick Foles unless something happens to Jalen Hurts. And, you know, when Nick Foles is called to action in Philly, we see what the results are.
Yes, at least one time we have seen the results be simply spectacular. And so, Dee Wood, let me try with you on this because we had a lot of discussion here last week. The Eagles pick at six. That is an inflection point in this draft. There do figure to be at least one, if not more than one, highly rated quarterbacks left sitting there. So with that in mind, Dee Wood, what would you think if they wind up trading for Nick Foles? Okay, so Dee Wood doesn't hear me either. Again, this, I've come to learn over the course of this time. So Dominique is back. We've just made a trade. We've obviously, from an audio perspective, we've traded Damian Woody for Dominique. So same question to you. Dominique, how significant do you think this move is?
I couldn't hear him.
Just leave Dee Wood up there talking to no one. I think it's funny. Go ahead, Dominique.
It doesn't move me very much. I don't find it significant. Kimberly used the word insurance. I think that Philly might be the only place or the only team in the entire league that looks at Nick Foles and sees it as a reliable insurance policy because he did win a Super Bowl for them. But it doesn't seem to me like it does much for that team. It doesn't make them much better. It doesn't make them any more stable at that quarterback position. They're still going to be looking. I'm not suggesting that they should draft one with that number six pick. I think they should move back and build up the rest of that roster. But Nick Foles is not the answer. I think maybe Jalen Hurts. We'll find out. I'm not high on Jalen Hurts as the long-term answer there, but I'd be more optimistic if I were an Eagles fan about what Jalen Hurts can give me than what Nick Foles has left in the tank.
That's fair, but it does go back to the previous thing you just said, which is if you yourself are not optimistic that Jalen Hurts is your quarterback of the future, and someone like Justin Fields or Trey Lance or Mac Jones is sitting there at number six, why are you shaking your head?
Yeah, I mean, I understand. Maybe you draft somebody like that. I doubt that Justin Fields is going to still be around. But I think that we need to accept, the same way general managers need to accept, they don't know what they're doing when it comes to drafting quarterbacks. It's a coin toss. You're much better off in this league if you are able to build up a substantial team around them, and no one knows that better than the Eagles. They built up a seemingly unbeatable team, a team that was so good that Carson Wentz, who is now in another city, had an incredible season, and Nick Foles, who hasn't had much success elsewhere, went on to win a Super Bowl. Like, that's the best way, the most reliable way to build up a franchise. And maybe you can flip a coin and get lucky, but chances are you're going to get it wrong. Because everybody gets it wrong. Nobody knows how to draft a quarterback. They're all going to pretend like they know, but they don't. Patrick Mahomes went number 10 overall. Nobody knows. They're just guessing. Yeah. They're flipping a coin and hoping.
It may have as much to do with how they develop the quarterback as it does with which one they wind up taking. Okay, so that brings us to the next question. Because as we talk about the NFC East, I think the one thing we all feel pretty safe about is guessing the Eagles are not going to win that division this coming year. But here's a new feature we called Tell Me I'm Right or Tell Me I'm Wrong. And this one we set up for Kimberly because, as Dominique pointed out earlier, she lives to tell everyone when they're wrong. So let's see how we will do on this one. Kimberly, I'm telling you, the Washington football team, you were just waxing rhapsodic about their acquisition of Curtis Samuel, and I agree. And they brought in Ryan Fitzpatrick last week, who was underappreciated for how well he has played the last few years. It is my contention Washington is far and away the best team in that division and the clear team to beat in the NFC East. Tell me I'm right or tell me I'm wrong.
Far and away, Greeny, you are so wrong. And it's crazy because I'm going to say the Dallas Cowboys are the favorite to win that division simply because their roster on paper is better and their quarterback is better. Look, when they lost Dak last year, look what happened to this team. Now, you are talking to somebody who witnessed Ryan Fitzpatrick in action. I watched it. I watched Fitzmagic turn to Fitztragic. It completely fizzled. And the cycle continues of Ryan being good, and then he's not good, and then they need another quarterback. Listen, Washington has upgraded for sure. Love Curtis Samuel, like William Jackson. But they got to do a little bit more. Ryan Fitzpatrick, you can't say Ryan Fitzpatrick is the best quarterback in the NFC East. You just can't.
No. By no means am I saying he's the best quarterback in the NFC East. But here's what I will say to all of you. Last year, the Washington football team won seven games, and they as a team were 32nd, dead last in the NFL in QBR. So all Ryan Fitzpatrick has to be is average. If they move up to 16th, just literally halfway in the sport, does that improve their record two games, three games? I mean, it's got to be an improvement. You literally can't get worse. And they've added other pieces. And they have by far the best defense in that division. Come on, D. Wood, tell everybody I'm right.
Greeny, I can't even roll with you right now. Listen. We know that. We saw the drop off. I'm rolling with Kimberly. I'm going with Dallas. We saw the drop off with the Dallas Cowboys when Dak was the starting quarterback, and then when he got injured. So we have to see. We have to know that the offense is going to be legit again. Defensively, just how you talked about how the Washington football team QBR was dead last. They can't get any worse. The Dallas Cowboys defense can't get any worse than they were last year. So I think if Dan Quinn can get those guys just respectable, Greeny, the Dallas Cowboys going to win that division.
Wait. Dominique, I love Dak. You love Dak
just
more than I love
take
anything.
Take this out, Greeny.
But I will say this. When Dak got hurt last year, they should have been winless.
Right.
We keep talking about how great their offense was. If Atlanta knew how to cover an onside kick, the Cowboys would have been winless when Dak got hurt. That was not the only problem that team had. The idea that we just insert Dak back in there and they're a 10-win team just doesn't make any sense to me, Neek.
Yeah, the problem was with the defense, but I think I'm siding with you, Greeny. Last week, I was leaning Dallas because I was still high on this Dak Prescott contract. But you're right. Top to bottom on the roster, if you're going to pick someone who should be the favorite, after I just came off saying how you need to build up a roster before you put a quarterback on it, I can't then go and say that the best roster in this division isn't going to win. So I think that Ryan Fitzpatrick is not the 32nd best quarterback in this league. He may be like 15th or 14th. That upgrade is a lot nicer for that defense. And they added William Jackson, which I think is a huge addition at the cornerback. That D-line is unblockable. So, yes, I think that they should be the favorites. Will they win it? Who the hell knows in that division? But going in, you look at roster top to bottom, Washington's got the best dudes. They do. I'm sorry.
Kimberly, I figured it out.
I'm so disappointed in Nate. So disappointed in Nate. You were laying for that flip-flopping.
But you know, it's so typical. It's so typical of Dominique.
I think that Dominique just did that to disagree with Kimberly, to be completely honest with you. He has not agreed with me on this take for a week.
Yes.
And then Kimberly goes on opposite me. And I'm telling you, Kimberly, I think that was aimed at you more than it was aimed at me. Your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. 100% agree. You are right about that, Greeny. Yes.
Okay, fair enough. I'll leave it on that thought for a moment. Meanwhile, we got great NCAA women's basketball action all day long here on ESPN. Today, noon Eastern, we got more first-round action. We got North Carolina versus Alabama, then Wright State and Arkansas, followed by Mount St. Mary's and Maryland, then at 6 Eastern, then Michigan State taking on Iowa State. All these games are also available on the ESPN app, so tons of action all day long here on ESPN. Meanwhile, no one's been busier this offseason than the Patriots. We've got a former Patriot here to tell you what has lit a fire under not only the coach, but also the owner. And D. Wood, Hembo is coming for you this morning, and here's the question. Who is the only NFL coach to reach the playoffs more times than Bill Belichick? That's the question. We're going after the answer. Next, it's Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Everyone in the studio are taking their guesses. Here we go, Damian Woody. Who is the only coach in NFL history to reach the playoffs more times than Bill Belichick?
This is a trick question. Nobody. There's no coach that's reached the playoffs more times than Coach Belichick.
That is incorrect. There is one, and his name was Don Shula, who made it 19 times. Belichick and Tom Landry, 18 each. Andy Reid next at 16. So Belichick needs one more to equal that record. And he may be working his way towards that. Sneaky big news coming out of New England, where the Patriots have re-signed center David Andrews, who spent the first 6 years of his career in New England, arising from an undrafted free agent to a four-time team captain. This was a move that a lot of people didn't expect to make because of the amount of money involved, but they did, and it adds to a lengthy list of signings the Patriots have made, a plethora of players on both sides of the ball. You see a bunch of names there, you know, Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, Matthew Judon, Kyle Van Noy, and many more. So the Patriots have been busy, and as far as all of the money that they have spent, this is what the owner, Robert Kraft, said to Peter King. He said, it's like investing in the stock market. You take advantage of corrections and inefficiencies in the market when you can, and that's what we did here. We'll see. Nothing is guaranteed, and I'm very cognizant of that. And then he said, but we're not in the business to be in business. We're in the business to win. And I tell you, I read that, and I got a big smile on my face as I bring this out to the crew here. And Dominique, I will start with you, because I think we all assume the competitiveness, if you will, between the Patriots and Tom Brady stems from the coach, Bill Belichick, whose legacy is sort of intertwined. But maybe it actually starts all the way upstairs. Dominique, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely it starts upstairs. Robert Kraft is incredibly competitive, and I'm sure that he probably was more bothered by the championship for Tom Brady last year than even Bill Belichick was, because Kimberly brought up the comparison earlier, like relationships, quarterback and their team is like a relationship. This is the same thing. You don't want to look on Instagram and see that your ex is living their best life without you, and that's what Robert Kraft is feeling right now. And so they're taking advantage of all these inefficiencies and whatever. They have money when other people don't, and they are retooling. They are ready to make a run. That is certainly the plan, and I'm sure Robert Kraft wants another championship without Brady as much as anybody in New England does.
Let me read you a quote on that, actually, because in the same story, D. Wood, Robert Kraft, again, you worked for him, and you worked for Belichick, and you played with Brady. He says of that, I was happy for him, of Brady. He's a great guy. He gave us 20 wonderful years. I wasn't happy to see him leave, but we gave him that opportunity. And I want to say, if we're not going to win and someone's going to do it, I'm happy for him. He deserves it. Damian Woody, your thoughts?
Come on, Greeny. That's just like political. Who wants to see their ex go out there and live good and eat good like that? Nobody wants to see that. For the Patriots, Mr. Kraft, to say, oh, yeah, if anybody's going to go do it, yeah, I want Tom Brady to go out there and win another Super Bowl. Come on, man. Who's buying that? I'm not buying that. Nobody should buy that. As competitive as everybody in that building is, no way. No way. So they came back with a vengeance this offseason, and we'll see where it takes them. But, I'm not buying that one bit.
Kimberly Martin, are you buying it?
No, not at all, Greeny. You know, I used to work in finance, so I understand you got to ride the ebbs and flows of the market, right? And last year, that was a dip. And that stung. But on top of that, seeing Tom Brady win the Super Bowl Every time I saw one of these free agent moves by the Patriots, I just thought of that Cam Newton gif where he's back in Carolina where he's got the towel around his neck and he's like, okay, let's go. That every single move the Patriots made in free agency this year said to me, all right, they were on the bottom and they are not trying to relive what they just went through last year. Cam, everybody's motivated. Belichick, he's not about to be embarrassed this year.
Yeah, it's look, old. I mean, to use the stock market analogy, Tom Brady is like a stock that you sold and then it just tripled in value almost immediately thereafter. Mm-hmm. And you're left with seller's remorse. Mm. Dominique, final thought.
Nah, I mean, Kimberly brought up the Cam Newton, like, let's go gif. When I saw those moves that the Patriots were making, I liked them. They were making some moves, but it reminded me of the Cam Newton sliding down the chair gif because none of those moves are really going to win them a Super Bowl unless Cam Newton turns back into a quarterback that he used to be because he ain't it.
Okay. Wow.
We'll see if he winds up being there. Who would have thought that a visual would happen like this on purpose on this show this year? How many times have we had that by accident? We actually did it on purpose once. Makes you feel good. All right. Next quarterback issue involves Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. Let's go through it. All right. We all remember 2019. Unbelievable season. One of the great seasons in NFL history. Threw for 3,000 yards. Ran for another 1,000. Unanimous MVP. This past season was something of an up and down year. His total QBR dropped nearly 10 points, threw for 10 fewer touchdowns, had COVID issues during the year that impacted him as well. And so despite being 30-7 in his regular season career, 30-7, he won his first playoff game, but people who want to criticize him will soon find ways to do it. And over the weekend, Dez Bryant, who played for the Ravens this past season, sent out this tweet. All this Lamar hate is starting to get on my nerves. Just know I got to see firsthand what he have to deal with. Him being able to play quarterback is far from the issue. And so I will just admit, Dominique, that when I first saw that tweet this weekend, I immediately started looking frantically for who he's referring to. Like, where is the... I'm well aware there has been an endless amount of Lamar hate out there over the course of the last few years, but nothing that I'm aware of that happened recently. So why do you think and what do you think Dez Bryant is doing here?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Lamar hate is a thing that just hangs around, and it's not rampant at this moment. But as soon as Lamar throws an interception or loses a game, it's going to come back out. As soon as Lamar has less than a stellar passing game, it's going to come out. So I think Dez Bryant might be preemptively responding to the haters that he knows will come, especially when we start talking about that Lamar Jackson extension. But I do find it an interesting thing for him to say because he's criticizing either the players around Lamar or the coaches around Lamar. And they've done a lot there to build up an offense that's unique, unlike anything that anyone else is running in the NFL, to support what Lamar Jackson does well. It's not to say that it's perfect, but it feels like it's very difficult to be critical of the coaches because of what they've created. It's unlike anything that you find anywhere else just for Lamar Jackson. Maybe they need to grow on it. Not maybe. They do need to grow and build on it. But it feels to me like Dez Bryant is making a criticism of both them and the receivers and weapons that Lamar has to work with.
He didn't seem happy there, right? The entire time he was there, for whatever reason, obviously I'm not in the room, he just didn't seem happy with the way everything was going. D. Wood, what do you take away from this whole thing, sitting here right now on Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, like I was scratching my head a little bit because I hadn't heard much chatter about anyone out there really criticizing Lamar Jackson. But I think Dominique is right. The minute that Lamar Jackson goes out there and throws a YOLO pass to somebody and it doesn't look good, everybody's going to come back out, you know. But listen, when it comes to the Baltimore Ravens, really their problem was they weren't able to duplicate what the, you know, how they want to be able to run the offense. You know, particularly the interior offensive line, they need to address that. And obviously, the big one in the building is getting someone on the outside. But this offense has to continue to evolve. Greg Roman got to continue to evolve that offense, particularly in the passing game, because if not, all the people that Dez Bryant's talking about, they're going to come back out in the season.
Well, I mean, Kimberly, we've seen a lot of wide receiver moves.
The interior of the – I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say
the interior of the line with the Zeitler signing, and they should be able to get a receiver in the draft because this draft is full of them. So I don't know if Dez can still be complaining after the draft. We'll see.
That's the question, Kimberly. We've seen a lot of receivers get signed and comparatively on the cheap, if you will. We were just talking about how Kenny Golladay got paid so much more than everybody else. What do you make of the fact that at least to this point, they have not really addressed the one thing that it feels like Lamar Jackson has played without his entire career?
Yeah, until the Ravens get him a true number one wideout, and until Lamar is able to consistently show that he can excel in the passing game, those questions, those doubts are going to continue to be raised. He's been criticized since the pre-draft process. So until he solidifies that part of his game, those doubts are going to be there.
We'll see. There are some names out there that could be intriguing, and we'll see if we get to them. But speaking of intriguing, I want everyone to relive a moment that we had a week ago today on this program when Dan Orlovsky's UConn Huskies got set up in the NCAA tournament, got matched up in the NCAA tournament with Dominique's beloved Maryland Terps. This was the conversation that ensued.
You know what that's called, Greeny? That's called a small wager for a guy like Dan Orlovsky. Okay, I'll take it. We'll do it. We'll do it. Shake on it. Artificial shake.
And I bet you that UConn beats Maryland on Friday night.
What? Okay. You stop
your lies. Now we're losing control. Okay. Now, I never heard the stakes, Dominique, but that game has been played, and Maryland has won. What were the stakes? What did you win from Orlovsky?
Everything. So, you see, Dan's not on the show today. I told him he can't come on today. No, Dan, I want my friend Kimberly on the show, my man D. Wood on the show, because we don't have room for losers on Get Up Mondays. So that being said, no more Orlovsky. And I can't wait till the Lady Terps match up against UConn in the championship game so you can lose to us twice. Ooh. Oh, I love Maryland.
Throwing it out there. By the way, the countdown to Orlovsky's response tweet right now is 3, 2, and 1. All right, we will take a break. We have a huge hour coming your way. Cinderella's been busy going back to Friday with a bunch of stunners already in the books. Billis will tell you who's on upset alert today. That's next. This is Get Up on ESPN.